The following program is produced and furnished in conjunction with John Gilroy of Lectromech, which is entirely responsible for its content.
Welcome to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy of Lectromech, providing solutions to design, certify, and maintain aircraft wire systems. Every week, John speaks with public and private sector IT experts about some of the IT trends and challenges facing agencies and industry. Now your host, John Gilroy.
Welcome to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. In the studio this morning, we have double trouble. We have Damon Davis. He's the director of the Health Data Initiative at HHS's Idea Lab. How are you today, Damon?
Good morning, John. Good to see you again.
Sitting next to Damon is Sarah Zellner. She is the director of programs for the Health Data Consortium. Good morning, Sarah. How are you?
Good morning. I'm doing well.
Boy, those were confusing titles. I think I'm going to say Damon and Sarah from now on the rest of the show. Well, you know, for the past 4 or 5 years, every time you go to Google and go to the Google News, you see a healthcare IT story that pops in there. I mean, they're good, they're bad, they're all kinds of new things and bad things and changes. And I thought we'd bring in the topic of healthcare IT from the federal perspective and maybe slice it and dice it from a different way. Let's slice and dice it today in the area of public-private partnerships. And in front of me, I have a public and private person. Mm-hmm. Sarah is, I guess, the private, and Damon very, very public. So we have a govy and a private person here. And that'd be a good little tandem to talk about public-private partnerships. And if you are interested in this topic and you're listening to the show, what you may want to do is attend an event coming up on September 18th, and it's sponsored by HIMSS, H-I-M-S-S, HIMSS, and the National Captor Area. So it's HIMSS-NCA.org. And you can register for the event coming up on the 18th and live in person, Damon Davis. And you can ask him questions. You can throw tomatoes at Sarah. You can have all kinds of fun. And right near the metro stop over in Roslyn. And it's where a lot of healthcare IT professionals go to get, exchange ideas more than anything. And this radio, sometimes it's a one-way thing. But you can say, well, geez, Sarah, you said something about Todd Park and the data pollutes. And, well, I want to know more about it, learn more about it. And so it's a good place to grab you there, huh?
Yeah.
Before we begin, Damon, tell us about your background, how you wound up in the area of healthcare IT, please.
Sure. So I began my career at HHS in the Office of the National Coordinator for Health IT, where I was focused on our desires to make sure that individuals, patients, and families are able to gain electronic access to their health records. And so I was in our Office of Consumer Engagement for a while. And then the opportunity to join the CTO's office and focus on the health data palooza arose. And I moved over to what is now known as the HHS Idea Lab, or the CTO's office, where I am the director of the Health Data Initiative. I focus on policy coordination and generally our strategic focus and our execution plans for opening data across the department out of our various operating divisions. And basically all of those efforts are represented by the public-facing website, healthdata.gov.
Great, great, great. And I want to talk about open data, open source, and open innovation today. Mm-hmm. And Sarah, your background, please.
Yeah, so I have a rather varied background. So I've got a PhD in sociology with an emphasis in demography, but I made my way to the private sector and went into management consulting, where I got involved in a public-private partnership in international health. And then from there, wove my way through corporate social responsibility and ended up now at the Health Data Consortium, which is another public-private partnership working to foster the availability and innovative use of open data to improve health and healthcare.
Longitudinal studies, statistics, groups of people. I think I put the pieces of the puzzle together.
That's
kind of interesting. You know, Damon, I went to LinkedIn this morning very, very early, and I typed in public-private partnerships. Mm-hmm. And I got people from DHS, Department of State, Commerce, Federal Highway Administration, MasterCard, World Bank, Fairfax County, and even my friends over at the University of Maryland. So public-private partnerships, this ain't a new concept, is it?
No, not by any stretch, but it's also one that continues to evolve. You know, the Department of Health and Human Services has a lot of different pathways for public-private partnerships. Many of them are out of the various operating divisions that we have across HHS. So just as a reminder to the listeners, the department is comprised of many, many different divisions. These are Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services, Food and Drug Administration, National Institutes of Health, and many, many other large names that are not necessarily always associated with the department. And many of them have varied ways that they engage the public in private, public-private partnerships. There are opportunities out of some of the operating divisions to sort of engage in their data through secure data stores that they make available to the public in certain ways. So, for example, CMS has a secure data enclave that they allow the public to buy into, buy a space at the table to do some data analytics. And at the Idea Lab, we've been focusing on our various ways to engage in public-private partnerships as well, one of which is through this program that we have called Innovators in Residence, where we invite the public and the private sector to find some issues that we share, that we have in common, that we want to resolve together. And often a company will basically indicate that they would like to place a person in government employment in order to focus on the resolution to that issue that we've identified. And so the Innovators in Residence is a program that you can find on the Idea Lab website. If you go to hhs.gov/idealab, you can learn more about it. But another one that obviously brings Sarah and myself here together is the Health Data Consortium, which the Department of Health and Human Services is a member of, a founding member of, as a matter of fact. And so in trying to think through the different ways that HHS could continue to open up its data, but also sort of expand its efforts towards education and engagement, towards identifying some of the problems and challenges that are making themselves known across the open data continuum, we realized that we were sort of reaching the end of what we could do as a federal entity, and we probably needed to start to engage a private entity that's going to do sort of the demand aggregation for what data is most important to be made available, some of the additional education and outreach, and especially things like the Health Data Palooza, which brings together innovators from across varied portions of healthcare and social services, research and education, the reporters of the world who are using data for all kinds of discovery. So the department is very focused on the various ways that we can be engaged with the public. And maybe I should take time to allow Sarah to tell us a little bit more about the consortium and how HHS is involved.
Yeah, let me set this up now. Many listeners are saying, okay, public, private, what does it all mean? What's it all meaning? I think a real good way to think about it is like the folks up at NIST. I mean, the folks up at NIST, they established weights and measures and time. I always go up there and check my watch. And that, makes it easy to do business in the United States and across the world. And when I think of public-private partnerships, I think of something like NIST working with manufacturers and establishing standards for manufacturing certain types of devices. And so let's take this technical geeky and apply it to the world of healthcare IT. So how does your company, how does your organization work with Damon's organization in this public-private little dance?
Right. So the Health Data Consortium is a nonprofit. So, and as Damon mentioned, I mean, HHS was one of the founding members of HDC. And so I guess the beauty of our relationship with HHS and now with our other members is that they can come together around the topic of open health data to support it. So not only is HHS involved, we have private industry, we've got foundations involved, and anybody from your huge companies to your very small companies can sit at the table and talk about open health data and think about ways that we can open data and to improve society and healthcare.
I have students at Georgetown who actually participated in the Data Palooza, had a booth, and actually had companies contact them, and they formed a business plan and formed a business based on the contacts they made at this crazy thing called the Health Data Palooza. It's putting public-private partnerships in work boots because you. One face against another face, and they learn new things. So it's a great idea. Let's take a break. When we come back, we'll talk more about the success stories and the public-private partnership and the prizes that are given away at this Data Palooza. And I mean, a lot of students that I know are interested in money. And this is a great deal where you can make a business contact and earn a lot. Yeah, it's great. You're listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. In the studio, Damon Davis. He's the director of the Health Data Initiative, HHS Idea Lab, and Sarah Zellner, director of programs at HDC. Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. In the studio this morning, we have Damon Davis and we have Sarah Zellner, and we're talking about public-private partnerships, HHS and private companies and trying to make life better for the citizens of the United States. In that chair, Sarah, there's a gentleman by the name of Todd Park that once sat there. And on the air, he used a strange Spanish phrase, and the Spanish phrase he used was data liberacion. Uh-huh. I thought that was just so entertaining. Uh-huh. And I looked up my dictionary. Well, he's obviously just playing around with it. But when I did some research on your organization, I found out that you actually have a Data Liberator Award. Is that right?
We do have a Data Liberator Award.
Isn't that silly? From HCA? Tell us about that.
Yeah. So our Data Liberator Award honors those individuals and groups who are really in the forefront of opening up data and really bringing it to the public and really making a difference in the health data world and in healthcare in general. So we gave away our second Health Data Liberator Award this past June at the Health Data Palooza, and it was given to a ProPublica team for the work they'd been doing on health data. And some really fantastic work there.
So that character, Todd Park, was one of the instigators for the first Health Data, and it's every year now, huh?
Yes.
So coming up 2014, 2015 as well?
That's correct. Health Data Palooza 2015 is coming up next year from May 31st to June 3rd. In 2015.
Marriott Wardman Park, right near the metro there.
That's right,
pop up
not
at the metro.
Far.
You can walk down to the zoo if you want. I mean, it's a huge hotel. You get lost in that hotel, that's for sure. So what your organization does, works with governments, nonprofits, and privates, and all kinds of different organizations to help advance the whole case of open data and sharing data.
That's correct. We advocate for and educate folks around open data. We believe that it really has the potential to change the way we look at healthcare and the way we bring healthcare to patients and consumers.
So, Damon, I deal with a lot of software developers and IT folks, and I always have challenges in doing this and challenges in doing that. And part of what the private business does is solve some of these challenges in my little world of software development. But I think in the world of public-private partnerships, there's challenges as well. And maybe people trying to get involved and not get involved and trying to figure out where they fit and don't fit. And maybe you can give us some insight on that.
Yeah, I mean, the public-private partnership is an evolving mechanism for the government to constantly be engaged with those in the private sector. And I think that one of the things that folks need to really understand is, as an opportunity really presents itself, you should really reach out and suggest to the government that there may be an opportunity there. The federal agencies are not always aware of where an opportunity could come from. And it's often the ideation that comes from those in the private sector and those that are not in a federal agency who can suggest a meaningful public-private partnership. And that's part of the way that the Health Data Consortium was even arranged, is that multiple different organizations from the Institute of Medicine to the Department of Health and Human Services and others basically sat around and realized that there was an opportunity to create this organization that could advance open data from the department, but not just the data that's made available, but actually sort of create the fertile ground for that data's innovative uses. And so as we look at, cost reduction in healthcare, as we look at improvements to quality, as we look at just generally educating those, say, in Silicon Valley, all the way across the country, who are not necessarily deeply invested in the policy mechanisms that are in play in D.C., and all of the different sort of components of the healthcare continuum that someone in a tech development role might not be aware of, the Health Data Consortium is actually that amplifying voice that allows for a lot of that education, outreach, policy awareness, et cetera. And we too, at the Ideal Lab, try to be sort of that connective tissue to the tech community and helping them to understand what it is that is part of that policy environment, what is part of the the privacy needs that a small organization might need to consider, et cetera. So the consortium really does help us with sort of that amplification, and that's true for many of the different public-private partnerships across the department.
Damon, Todd did a lot of outreach to different communities, and I was at an event at Georgetown where he spoke to 200 people, and he talked about the three O's. I mentioned them earlier: open data, open source, and open innovation. Mm-hmm. And wow, if you can listen to this guy on anything on YouTube, just write down everything he says. I mean, this guy is so bright. So for the benefit of some of our listeners, what is the difference between open data and open source? Same thing, different? What does it mean?
Yeah, so, open data is more along the lines of what the department is able to make available and what other, there are private sector entities that are making data available as well. But the idea is You know, the department collects a whole lot of information, a whole lot of data, and they curate it for various purposes. It could be for grants or contracts, research, etc. But the public is often seeing that data from a completely different lens than the original reason that the data was collected or curated. And so I like to think of the availability of open data as making things available that can be utilized for an alternative reason from the original reason that it was collected or curated. So that's open data. From an open source perspective, you know, there are a lot of different projects and, you know, software development activities and all kinds of things that the government, that the private sector are involved in, and sort of allowing folks to build on the innovations that you've already laid the foundation for is basically the grounds for open source. It's the sort of communal engagement that allows for continual and advanced development on something that is not necessarily sort of private and proprietary, but something that is going to be contributory to a greater good, and therefore something that that many different contributors can borrow from, but then lend back to in order to advance that foundation that has been created. So open source is a really powerful mechanism for sort of creating advances in innovation by through a crowdsourcing model, basically.
Sorry, I want to talk about more of this open data idea here. Mm-hmm. I've got to take my daughter's car into the shop on Friday, and they're going to click information on it and the tires and everything else. And I don't really care, who knows what kind of tires she has, or I don't know, kind of, you know, air filter they're going to put in. I really don't care. However, there may be people out there who are very sensitive about their medical records being shared. Okay, mm-hmm. the automobile records, mm-hmm. who cares? You know, okay, what kind of lawnmower I have, who cares? Now, my medical stuff, there's some people who are sensitive to that. So mm-hmm. how can someone like Damon say, yeah, we're going to make this open, mm-hmm. and then people are going to, wait a minute here, Damon, not my, how do you work that with the public?
Well, I mean, privacy is certainly an issue when it comes to open data, and a lot of people are concerned about it. I mean, they don't want their data, you know, to fall into the wrong hands and to be used to identify them. And so HDC isn't a data holder per se, but we do advocate for safe use of data. So that is to say that that data is revealed and opened in a manner in which people feel they that it is safe to be shared. So that involves, talking about HIPAA, certainly talking about the concerns that the public has. I'm talking about de-identified data, which is taking data and removing any personal identifying information related to it, which is a big part of keeping it private. And those practices are being done, they're being implemented. So when the data is mined and analyzed, there is no identifying information related to it, so we can't trace it back to you.
Is that feedback you get, Damon, when you're at events and meeting people? They go, hey, buddy, is that a concern that people have?
Yeah, from time to time you do hear folks saying, you know, I'm really concerned about privacy, and that issue is always going to be something that people are considering. I think that coming generations are going to slightly care less and less about privacy, but there does continue to be sort of this evolving discussion about it. And I think it's important to recognize that privacy is one of the foremost concerns of the department when it comes to the release of data. We've got a lot of different measures that we go through in order to de-identify data, perturb the data, so it's not exactly representative of specific populations. And there are just, I'm not a statistician by any means, but there are a great many measures that people way smarter than me go through in order to make sure that the data is safe and available to be released to the public. And then, you know, part of the thing that I sort of have already underscored is the idea that we need to educate people about what it is that can be done with the data when it's made publicly available. So, you know, there are a ton of entrepreneurs and innovators out there who are utilizing the data for fuel for their own innovations, and we need to make sure that they understand the privacy and security measures that are in place and that need to be in place in order to keep the data safe and secure.
I'm pretty active on Twitter this morning. I went to a Twitter feed at HHS Idea Lab, and I saw an interview with a gentleman by the name of Damon Davis, and he was talking about registries and silos and standards. And I thought, take a little break and come back and maybe expand more on registries and this whole idea of longitudinal studies and the value of some of this data, where it can be, I guess, de-identified, mm-hmm. and big data scientists can make conclusions out of everything from health to fraud and waste. So that's an interesting way to take a look at these big, huge data sets that are floating around out there, like the healthcare registries. You are listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. In the studio this morning, you have Damon Davis from HHS and Sarah Zellner from the Healthcare Consortium.
Mike Causey on Federal News Radio.
I would rather give an ostrich a pedicure than play this.
Your turn with Mike Causey, Wednesdays at 10 a.m. only on Federal News Radio. Check out Mike's column, The Federal Report, weekdays at federalnewsradio.com, or sign up to have Mike's daily column delivered directly to your email.
You know, they're probably going to find out in 20 years that carrying one of these in your wallet causes your buttocks to fall off.
Mike Causey on Federal News Radio, 1500 a.m.
Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. In the studio this morning, we have Damon Davis. He is the director of the Health Data Initiative at the HHS Idea Lab. We have Sarah Zellner, director of programs for the Health Data Consortium, HDC. And, you know, I write a blog called Tech Tuesday Blog. I have students, a lot of listeners read blogs. Damon, is there a blog that you read or maybe you can suggest for my listeners to keep up on all this technology, something you recommend?
It's funny. I don't actually read one regularly. I could certainly recommend the healthdata.gov blog.
Yeah.
Healthdata.gov/blog is a great place to get information about our open data initiatives and innovations across the department. You could also check out the Idea Lab blog, where you can learn about some of our various pathways for innovation. But I tend to read things on Twitter sort of as they come. And so I don't follow one blog specifically as much as follow different people and try to figure out what kinds of things they're interested in and talking about.
Sarah, does that sound like a radio voice to you?
Oh, yeah,
that
absolutely.
Sounds like a radio voice to me. They're going to kick me out and give him this show. Wow, it sounded pretty good there, didn't it?
I'll take your job, John. I like your job.
I know that. We're going to erase him from the Jimmy, erase him from everything he said in the last half hour. Any blogs you can recommend, Sarah?
I can recommend the HDC blog, so at thehealthdataconsortium.org. So so we do a good job with definitely keeping people informed on what's going on open health data and some of the players in it. So and we're big on innovation, so we really like highlighting what's going on in the open data space, new startups and companies that are coming up, entrepreneurs. It's a lot of good stuff there. So, but I, like Damon, I have to admit, you know, you get awfully busy and it's hard to find time in a day to really peruse the net and find some other good information out there.
That's not a very radio friendly term. I'll do it real slowly. Health Data Consortium, CONSORTIUM. Mm-hmm. So healthdataconsortium.org. Nonprofit.
That's right. Okay, that is correct.
A lot of people are in their cars going, what's that down?
Yeah, okay. It's a mouthful.
Healthdataconsortium.org. And you have a Twitter handle too. I think it's at HD Consortium. So that's a lot easier than
it's
everything else.
Short.
HDC. There are companies that may be listening to this kind of scratching their heads going, well, geez, I'd like to learn more about this public-private partnership. Maybe there's a way to connect with Sarah or connect with Damon or someone else. And a good way to do that in a face-to-face manner would be at the HIMSS-NCA event coming up on September 18th. And you get more information at HIMSS, N as in Nancy, C as in Charlie, A, HIMSS-NCA.org. Go to the calendar there. They have a little sheet of who's going to be there, and it's going to be moderated by Damon Davis, the radio voice. In my world, they call it VOG, Voice of God. And moderated by VOG, Damon Davis. And it'll be a lot of fun. And you're not the only ones there. There's four or five people on this panel. They have people from the military health system, from CMS. There's the National Coordinator's Office. There's all kinds of brains up there. I mean, Sarah, you're going to have a hard time, you know, elbowing your way in there with all these smart folks.
I'll do it. Make room.
Sarah's tough. We watch out for her.
Yeah. So let's say we're at this HIMSS event coming up, okay? And we're having coffee ahead of time or something. I walk up to Damon and go, well, geez, Damon, I'm with ABC Health Company, and we're interested in partnering with you folk. Where can I get more information? And your response would be?
You should go to hhs.gov/idealab, and you can check out some of our various pathways for innovation that are made available online. But you should also feel free to email us at idealab@hhs.gov. Once again, it's idealab@hhs.gov. And so feel free to reach out with interest, ideas, and just general opportunities or questions about some of the various pathways that we have available.
Now, Damon, my wife tells me that out of every 10 ideas I have, 9 are bad. So I wouldn't be much of an innovator. But there are room for innovators. So there may be someone, I don't know, maybe it's a student sitting in Illinois somewhere, or who knows, or Texas. A lot of healthcare IT going on at the University of Texas in Austin, I know mm-hmm. that. And maybe they want to be one of these entrepreneurs. So mm-hmm. what is this IIR program, and how do they even get their name in the hat?
Yeah, good question. So the IIR program is really intended to take somebody who has the sort of innovative entrepreneurial mindset and bring them into the department in order to sort of explore opportunities for innovation in a specific area. So the Innovator in Residence program was set up as one might think, as a public-private partnership in order to try to allow the private sector to invest in the solution to a problem that they have identified in any particular sector of the healthcare or social services system. So, for example, we've had one in the past. The first IIR we ever had was Pierce Graham Jones, who worked on a project through West Health Institute, where he was focused on helping to develop and release the first set of standards for blue button data sharing. And so, realizing that we had a real good opportunity
there. Boy, did that blow up. Wow, blue button just... It was so popular, huh?
Yeah, it really was. Wow. I mean, Blue Button has been such an amazing sort of thing in terms of creating, if nothing else, the general public's awareness for the fact that, you know, maybe I should be thinking about whether I should be getting electronic access to my health information.
And there's a poster child for public-private partnership right there with West Health Data.
Yeah, that's sure. exactly right. And so the Blue Button, you know, campaign has really expanded quite a bit into some major corporations that have identified Blue Button and data sharing as an opportunity for a lot of interoperability.
Sarah, I don't want to do any inside baseball talk here. There may be some listeners that don't know what this Blue Button is all about. Why don't you explain?
Oh, Blue Button. So Damon might actually be better suited to talk through Blue Button, but so I think it might be.
Yeah, no problem.
So
the general gist is, you know, individuals. Up until now, in a paper-based record system, have not really realized that you can actually easily request access to your personal health information now that electronic records are on the scene. And so we've all been sort of mired in that challenge of calling the records department, being charged for our own records, and really feeling like the data belongs to us, but not having really positive and smooth pathways to get to that data. Blue Button has created the ability for data sharing to be made available through electronic health records and through laboratories and all kinds of different organizations that will allow you to gain access to your personal health information through electronic means. And Blue Button is sort of the standards that set the stage for the data sharing that will allow the individual, the family member, the care coordinator to be participatory in the healthcare system and not feel like one of the roadblocks to that participation is, you know, the records department.
And you can go to YouTube and type in, give me my damn data, and get a musical interpretation of that, can't you? There we all hear that. It's interesting. So, Sarah, when you look at, we just touched on electronic health records here, didn't we?
Mm-hmm.
And one part of this whole world of healthcare information is these concepts of registries we talked about mm-hmm. and things going back and forth and interoperability. What kind of challenges are presented in this area, and where would something like your organization fit in with figuring out this idea of interoperability and mm-hmm. registries and standards and electronic health records? Boy, it gets complicated.
Right, it is. There are definitely a lot of issues involved in open data. And so where we get involved is we work with our members and others to really talk about these issues, to talk about interoperability, I mean, standards, data quality, and because we have such a varied membership, I mean, we've got data brokers, we have payers, we've got providers, we've got entrepreneurs and VCs. So it's the Wild West of needs and desires. And so really bringing that together in the same room, because open data, I mean, all of these people play a part in the open data issues. So we are the convener then. I mean, Health Data Consortium is the convener of all of these issues to really find consensus around them and hopefully make the healthcare space much better as a result.
We're going to have to take a break here, Damon. When we get back, I want to talk about mobile healthcare IT and this whole idea of our healthcare apps, medical devices or not. Should they be regulated? By whom? Is this a public-private challenge? Where's the FDA? Where's that fit in the hospital? I mean, there's all kinds of challenges here and coming up with defining some of these ideas. Like 5 or 6 years ago, I never would have thought of someone with a smartphone application and trying to define that as medical device. It's kind of interesting. We'll have to talk about that after the break. You are listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. In the studio, we have Damon Davis and Sarah Zellner, and we're talking about public-private partnerships.
FederalNewsRadio.com, your one-stop shop for all things federal. Listen daily to interviews with federal managers and government contractors. Read Mike Causey's daily federal report, or just stop by for an update on the latest news affecting the federal community. FederalNewsRadio.com, your source for federal news now.
Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. In the studio is Damon Davis. He is the director of the Health Data Initiative at HHS Idea Lab. And we have Sarah Zellner, who is director of programs for HDC, the Health Data Consortium. For more information from Sarah, you can go to healthdataconsortium.org. And Damon, more information for you probably at HHS. At what would the website be for you?
You should go to the HHS Idea Lab site. It's hhs.gov/idealab.
Slash. We like those slashers out there.
Like the slash.
And both of these distinguished guests will be on a panel that's going to be taking place on the 18th of September over in Roslyn there, right near the metro. You get more information at himss-nca.org. And show up for the event and maybe catch Sarah afterwards and we can ask her some more specific questions. Or if there's something that piqued your interest here, you go up to Damon and go, well, geez, no, you talked about that registry thing and how can I get involved in that? And a lot of information is exchanged in an informal basis I've found at many HIMSS events. We have listeners who are active on Twitter. I sure am. My Twitter handle is at Ray Gilray. And Damon, what about your organization? Do you folks active on Twitter at all?
Oh, yeah. We try to stay very active on Twitter, if nothing else, than to get the information out there so people know what's going on. So my Twitter handle is at Damon L. Davis. That's L like love.
And love. You can do it like a radio guy. Love.
You could also check out the Idea Lab Twitter handle, which is at HHS Idea Lab.
Great. And HD Consortium for you, is that right?
That is correct.
At HD Consortium. Many listeners have not studied Latin, so they don't know all those spellings of those words like that. So that's all good. So Twitter's important. I think it keeps up with a lot of really current information and can lead you. For example, if you follow Damon, he may point you to a blog that may have information that can help you solve a problem. Or someone like Sarah, she may say, oh, by the way, I'm speaking at this event next week. And you may want to ask her or Gail or one of the other folks a question. And it's a I just like the idea of human beings in front of human beings. I mean, the exact opposite of me being a computer guy and tweeting, but human beings in front of human beings can solve all kinds of problems. Electronic data health records, electronic health records. There's usually a polarity here between sharing data and exchanging data and how that information gets exchanged. Sometimes they don't get along. So, Damon, we talked about registries and collecting information on diseases and then electronic health records. This seems like a problem that almost can't be solved. I mean, what's the answer for something like this? It's so difficult, doesn't it?
Yeah, there's a lot of challenges. I mean, you know, we can't forget the fact that a lot of the systems that we're building, a lot of the connections that we're trying to make are based on paper-based, uncoordinated efforts that have transpired over many, many decades. And so as we evolve healthcare and the social services systems and we try to allow data and information to sort of transfer in automated fashion, we have to really begin to think about what it looks like to standardize some of those data, to really make meaningful connectivity between a lot of the data sets, a lot of the registries, and a lot of other things that are out there. So, you know, if you're calling, hemoglobin A1C one thing in one data set or in one registry, and you're calling it something, you know, with one of the multiple diabetes names in another registry, you've immediately got a disconnection. And so it's going to be some of that sort of leveling of the playing field and the standardization of data and how we consider our interoperability that's going to be really, really impactful and powerful as we make these connections.
know, Damon, listeners are listening going, geez, hemoglobin, interoperability, registries. I wonder if this guy's a real nerd or just talking like a nerd. So I've designed a scientific 10-question test that I'm going to give to Sarah first, and we're going to find out if she is a card-carrying nerd, and then we're going to confirm that Damon is a card-carrying nerd.
So you seem to have a predetermined answer,
predetermined
John.
Outcome. Uh-huh. Judge, I object. This is scientific, Sarah, so you can be trustworthy with this one. So we're going to your house. How many old-school desktops do you have in your house, Sarah?
Zero.
Zero. That's the right answer. And how many cell phones have you purchased in the last year?
Zero.
Zero. Well, that's the wrong answer. Most nerds get like 3 a year or something. And do you have a personal Twitter feed?
No.
Do you have a personal blog?
No.
Okay. And what kind of smartphone do you have?
I don't own a smartphone.
Whoa, the needle is going towards normal.
Yes,
from nerd to normal. You're way on the normal side here. Wow. So I can't ask you about your app.
It's a semi-smartphone. Does that count?
It's a semi-smart. kind of smart. My kids ask, what's your dad? Well, he's kind of smart. how many tablet devices do you have at home?
I have one.
One, okay. Are you active in any social networks?
LinkedIn.
Okay. And when was your last status update in LinkedIn?
I don't know, maybe a month ago.
Okay. And the last book you read, was it electronic or paper?
It was paper.
You are definitely on the normal scale. You are not near a nerd. You are very, very normal. Wow. What
normal
an accusation.
No, I know. No, but very a data normal. Lover.
It's,
so
it's
I don't
nice
know.
To meet you.
Okay, so now.
So you're not, look at all the things you know.
On the other side of the spectrum, Mr. Davis, we're going to ask you, how many desktops have in your house?
Zero.
Zero, right answer. How many cell phones have you bought in the last year?
I purchased one.
One? Okay, that's okay. Do you have a personal Twitter feed?
Yeah. I do, okay. At Damon L. Davis.
Do you have a personal blog?
I don't have a personal blog, but I have an About Me page.
Well, yeah.
That's close enough. Yeah.
What kind of smartphone you have?
I'm an iOS guy. I have an Apple.
Okay. What was the most popular app have you used the most in the last 30 days?
Oh, wow. Evernote.
Evernote. Okay.
Yeah.
So you break into your house this afternoon. How many tablets do you see floating around there?
About five.
Cinco. Wow. I told you. He's not normal. He's a nerd.
Every child has their own, so the adults can maintain their own. So.
And are you active in any social networking sites?
To a small degree. I'll do a little Instagram every once in a while, and I try to stay away from some of that stuff just because I get annoyed by some people's personal opinions.
And last status update in LinkedIn, when was that?
It's been a while. I tend to share tweets through LinkedIn so that people get sort of similar awareness across both platforms.
Last book you read was electronic or paper?
Electronic.
Wow, you got whooped there, Sarah, real bad.
Oh, yeah.
The nerd in this room is the gentleman with the bow tie and the pocket protector.
Yeah. Nerd you out, Sarah.
It's all good. I don't mind being normal.
Yeah, you should stay right where you are.
So, Sarah, it's hard to do predictions in the area of healthcare IT and healthcare. I mean, no one could have predicted 10 years ago what's happened in this world. Where's it going to head in the next 4 or 5 years, and where's your organization going to play? What role is it going to play in this whole transition?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think open data is definitely evolving very quickly. I mean, it's evolved very quickly even in the past 5 years. And so to think about where it's going to be 5 years from now is it's pretty incredible. I think we'll definitely talk much more about interoperability. I think that'll be a big issue. Certainly, private industry opening data, I think we'll talk more about that, and certainly a little bit more about more government opportunities in opening data. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot out
there. Yeah, the opens again, open data.
Open,
and
open.
What are the other ones? Open innovation, open source. It's
and
all open,
yes.
Open. Crystal ball time for you, Damon. 4 or 5 years from now, interoperability going to be whooped. where's it all heading?
4 or 5 years from now, it's going to be really interesting. I think you're going to start to see a lot more government data made available in places that it's not currently available. Some private data stores are going to really allow for the mashups and creative uses of data that are integrated with private sources of data. That's going to make for some real meaningful discoveries that we're just not able to achieve right now. I think you're going to see a lot more sort of timely delivery of some of our data sets. And I think you're going to start to see some gravitation towards specific protocols and interoperability that are going to allow for sort of a separation from, you know, a multitude of different interoperability possibilities to sort of a streamlined 2, 3, or 4 that are going to become a little more in the mainstream as to what's acceptable, what's used by the innovation community, what's therefore used by, you know, electronic health records vendors and things along those lines. So there's a long way to go, but I think you're going to start to see a movement in a certain direction that's going to be telling for the next 5 years.
Sarah, a big movement is move to the cloud. Do you think this whole transition to cloud is going to be limited by security restrictions on healthcare information data? Or you think where's the cloud fit in all this security and regulations? It's a tough one, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. But a lot of data is moving to the cloud. So I think it's a natural move. I mean, it certainly won't be an easy move, but I think it will be very instrumental going forward. So we'll see what happens.
On a personal basis, Damon, healthcare information for individuals. So I'm sitting here saying, well, geez, I want to get a life insurance policy, and I'm going to have Allstate come out, and Allstate's going to say, well, we're going to give you this policy if you wear this little Fitbit thing, and then we'll give you this of X. Now, if you're a smoker and a drinker and you don't want to wear this, then we're going to have to pay 3X. And so I think this is very personal. All of a sudden, the person in the street listened to this in their car going, oh, so that's where healthcare data may come in, and where mobile healthcare data, where if you opt into wearing the Fitbit, I get a discount. And would you do that, Damon? Or this gets all difficult, doesn't it?
Yeah, there's a lot of different interesting models that are sort of coming up out in the private sector with regard to sort of employers trying to push engagement to their employees in order to make them help be more engaged and be healthier for themselves in order to reduce costs for both the company and the individual. So I think that as we consider sort of what the healthcare continuum looks like, the fact that, you know, we spend 99% of our time outside of a clinical visit, and therefore we generate a lot of data about ourselves, and we do a lot of activities that are not necessarily engaged in our healthcare system, there's going to be a lot of opportunity to take the data that we generate about ourselves and have it be infused into the clinical continuum. And that's going to be really valuable for all kinds of engagement with individuals and towards making themselves healthier.
It could be a brave new world. We'll have to come back in 5 years and revisit this topic as everyone's going to visit, because it's part of their lives. You're listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. I'd like to thank my guest today, Damon Davis, Director of the Health Data Initiative at HHS Idea Labs, and Sarah Zellner, Director of Programs at the Health Data Consortium. Thank you very much.
You've been listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy of Electromech, providing solutions to design, certify, and maintain aircraft wire systems. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show on our website, federalnewsradio.com. Federal Tech Talk, Tuesday mornings at 9, only on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM.